There's other seats in the middle.
No, there's other seats. All right, good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Amen. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please do not go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to continue our conversation on steps 8 and 9. We started part 1 last week, and we're going to again continue on steps 8 and 9, part 2. I'll turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. David and I started this up a few months ago at his house. And it was an effort just to try and replicate what we had been doing for years with guys in Starbucks when we were sponsoring them. And just really to try to cut through all the verbiage and really just get down to the essence of what's in these steps. And rather than try to teach people about the steps, because neither of us are experts on the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, what we wanted to do is just share our experience, strength, and hope in a simple way of how these simple actions have helped us. So we're certainly not here to educate anybody about the book. There's people in the room that know a lot more about the book than either of us do, and that's not our intention. But what we are going to do tonight is we're going to continue on with steps 8 and 9. And what we had talked about last week was how the amends section in the big book really mirrors the fourth step. And the fourth step breaks selfishness out into three common manifestations in the life of me as an alcoholic: resentment, fear, and sex conduct. And the amends part of the book really mirrors that. And it also talks about resentment amends, fear amends, and sex conduct amends. So we really took care of the resentment amends and the fear amends to a large extent last week. And tonight what we're going to focus on, we're going to focus on those sex conduct amends, and then we're going to move on to the sort of, I think what we would maybe call a living amends, you know, to our interactions with people moving forward, people that we're going to be our families, for example, and our colleagues, and our interactions with them. That's what the book covers. Anyway, let's get started. So we're going to kick off on page 80, 80, And we're going to read that paragraph that starts off, "The chances are," which is actually the second last line on page 80. "The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who's literally gone through hell for him." And the interesting thing about this, and my experience with this, is that before I came to AA, I had domestic troubles. And since I've been in AA, I've had domestic troubles. this seems to be an area, like we often talk about, the honey and the money, you know, and these are areas that I, as a sober alcoholic, just like when I was drinking, I find this very difficult to maintain honesty and so forth in a relationship with anybody, really. And I suppose the closer you are to me, the more I'm going to struggle with that. I have a sort of need-to-know basis, you know. And anyway, so it talks about being mixed up with women. And when I was drinking, I think I wanted to be a ladies' man, but I was usually really drunk. So it didn't generally work out, because I still don't really understand this. Apparently, forget this, your average woman is not interested in a guy who's lying on the floor covered in vomit and urine. Now, I don't know why not, but apparently that's not a big draw for the ladies in Glasgow and Scotland or anywhere else that I got drunk. So I wasn't really that successful. The sort of relationships that characterised my drinking, I was very, very possessive and jealous. And I was also, as time went on, increasingly violent in those relationships. So putting on a face to the outside world of being a nice guy, and then behind closed doors, being very drunk and very abusive. And that got worse as I got older and as the drinking continued. And I'm someone, and I've shared this with you guys before, I've come out of blackouts, starting off the night with a romantic evening, me and the woman I claim to love. This was a girl I was dating in college. And we start out a nice romantic evening, we'll just have a couple of drinks. And then fast forward 2 or 3 hours, I'm in a blackout, and I come out the blackout, and she's in the closet, and I'm trying to kill her. I've got a knife in my hand, and I'm trying to kick my way through the closet door to get her, and the house is all smashed up. So that's the sort of stuff that was going on when I drank. I'm not in Alcoholics Anonymous because I had one too many sherries. When I drink, I more or less turn into a lunatic. Some people would say that I am a lunatic anyway, but when I drink, it really just turns the volume up on that big time. And so anyway, I'm in a committed relationship, but except when I'm not, except when it's inconvenient for me. And that's really the way I behave. And I wouldn't care to have that advertised, because then I would look bad. And that's a big part of me. And I would like to say that this is just when I drink. My morals appear to often operate at the level of, can I get away with this? You know, am I going to get caught doing this? And I know there's a lot of good people in AA, and there's a lot of people that are moral and upstanding and good, but I'm one of those bottom feeders. And I would like to say, you know, my character's developed a lot since I came to AA, and I think through making some of these amends and over time going to meetings, some parts of my character have got a lot better. For example, I haven't been involved in any domestic violence since I came to AA. That just hasn't happened. And that's been a long time. And I'm typically not abusive, you know, verbally abusive anymore either. I don't yell. I'm a wife. I'm married now. I got married after I was sober. So there's a lot of improvements. But there are other areas of my life since I got sober that are probably about the same as when I was drinking. And then there's still other areas that may actually have got worse since I got sober. And I wish I didn't have to tell you that, because what I want to tell you is I'm perfect. And I'm morally good and spiritual. And now I just sort of sit here and heal people. Because I'm so good. You know, I'm good Graham, St. Graham of Norfolk. But unfortunately, that's not what's happened. So, but it tells me I'm probably not much worse than other people. And this is the thing, you see. I like to use my alcoholism as a big excuse. After I get sober, I know I did that and it was really bad, but I only did that because I'm an alcoholic. And really what I want is I want a pass. You know, I want a pass. And sometimes it's just saying that to myself. It's an excuse to get me out of stuff. And then it talks about what it's like to live with me. If you live with me for a few years, if you're lucky enough to be in that spot, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. And it doesn't say after a few years living with a drinking alcoholic. It just says after a few years living with an alcoholic, period. And then it says how could she be anything else? And, you know, that's certainly something in the marriage that I need to be very careful of, because I'm very tiring to be around. And if you're living in the same house as me, you get it all. You get the good, the bad, and the ugly, but there's a lot of the bad and the ugly sometimes. And it's whatever's going on in my mind that I think's real. But usually it's not real, and I'm just going to tell you about it. I'm going to get fired! You know, that brings a lot of a feeling of security to the family finances. When Dad's running around saying, I'm going to get fired! That makes my wife feel real secure. So these are the sort of ongoing things that I have to try and deal with, and it talks about feeling remorseful, and this talks about my wife. She's loyal and courageous, and her and I have been sober the whole time we've been married, but we've gone through a lot of tough times. We had a custody battle that we went through together. We had a kid that nearly died, and now he's brain damaged. We're going through that together. So there's a lot of things that we've been through together, but I think what this is saying to me is that, you know, whatever the situation is right now, when I was drinking or right now, I think I can really, I have an opportunity every day in Alcoholics Anonymous to talk to other guys, to say some prayers and really to hit the reset button and to try to get a new perspective on what's going on here in these relationships. And that's the wonderful thing about this. Wherever I'm at right now, whatever I'm doing that I'm not supposed to be doing, or whatever I'm not doing that I am supposed to be doing, I've always found if I just tell somebody in AA, some of the close-mouthed friends that I have, my sponsor, and just get it out, it seems to take the power out of it, and then I seem to be able to be refocused onto what I'm supposed to be doing. And as we'll read later on, what I'm supposed to be doing is to be kind, loving, tolerant, and patient. And that's a tall order for someone like me.
Yeah, I find this first complete sentence in the paragraph that you read rather presumptive. You know, the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Don't recognize what a nice, well-intentioned gentleman I am, apparently. And I think about, because part of my story, you know, when I got here, I had blown up those relationships. You know, the loyal, courageous gal that I was with for many, many years in my 20s. We celebrated our 21st birthday together, et cetera. And so we were together for about 4 or 5 years, just doing life, basically working, paying bills and so forth. But she was the one that bore the brunt of the worst of my alcoholism. I watched her leave to go to work one morning with these big Jackie Onassis sunglasses on to hide the black eyes that had apparently happened the night before. She had been on the other side of me saying, baby, that's not me. You know that's not me. That's not me. That's not me. And I could say it enough, you know, she'd say, I know it's not you. Whew. Got away with another one, you know. And for her loyalty and courageousness, as I was reaching the end of my troubles, I got a windfall. I got some cash. I got a buying opportunity on a house in Ocean View. And so I thanked her for her support over the years, and I just went and lived there by myself. You're welcome. So, because I didn't want to be part of that. So I had pushed everyone away by the time I came here, 28 years old, 6 months sober, suicidal, unable to live with myself, unable to picture life with or without alcohol. So that was one of the situations that I could never fully write. And in fact, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I wanted to rush out and make amends to her right away. You know, and you guys were telling me, well, there's some steps that come before that. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But you don't understand. And they're like, no, you don't understand. She doesn't want to hear from you. And I had to find that out the hard way. So what I where I experienced this most is it's also part of my story that that I came around here. I finally accepted what you guys had to offer. I made the best effort that I could at doing what you guys suggested in AA. And over the period of about 6 or 7 years, everything I wanted out of life came my way. Everything I wanted out of life came my way. Pretty little wife comes my way. There's no, the domestic violence issues are gone. All that stuff is in the past now that I'm sober. St. David, once again. And a business comes my way because AA gave me the courage to say, yes, I'll try. I became financially prosperous. The checkbook swelled. Started signing mortgages, you know. I'm a big boy now. Signing the mortgage, you know. And so I own property, I have a business, I have the wife. All I ever wanted was to be a dad. Really just wanted to have a son. Always dreamt of having a son. Three of them came along. I've got three boys. And with all that responsibility and all that arrival that I was experiencing, AA took more and more of a back seat. I really don't have to, the baby's colicky. The baby, I got this client and I had a sponsor die and I wasn't in a hurry to hire another one. And what happened was, the thing that's amazing and the reason I take the time to tell it is that I never made a decision to leave AA. I never said, you know what? I'm done with that. I've graduated. I just slowly leaked away. Sobriety lost its priority little by slowly. And so what happened was, now I'm sober 10 years, 11 years. I won't even come pick up a chip in AA because what's the message there, you know? Hey, did it all by myself. See me after the meeting for David's program, you know? And all the while, untreated alcoholism is coming in. My default mode is back. I'm restless. I'm irritable. I'm discontent. I'm absolutely, absolutely unimpressed with the job that she is doing as a mother. The job that she is doing as a homemaker. I mean, we made that deal. You go out and earn the money, David, and I'll stay home and keep all this stuff tight. And I was like, well, that's the way I saw it on TV when I was a kid, so let's do it. And after a few years of living with an untreated alcoholic, she becomes resentful. She becomes worn out. She starts to avoid me. So now I've got a wife who's not doing a very good job and avoiding me. So I escalate my bad behavior. Basically, 14 years sober, 14 years separated from alcohol, mama's got a boyfriend, and I'm being invited to leave the marriage. So that was the thing that propelled me back to, once again, a loyal, courageous gal burned out from dealing with untreated alcoholic David. And I came crawling back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Help, oh my God, help, you know what she did to me? You know, and a few of you guys knew what my problem was. And a few of you guys weren't afraid to tell me. Yeah, yeah, let's put all that aside, David. You're suffering from untreated alcoholism. And if you're willing to come here and do these simple things, that situation may or may not right itself to your satisfaction. But we can help you with your alcoholism. So that's what I bring to the table drunk. That's what I bring to the table sober, without AA.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 81. We're going to start off whatever the situation on page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we've been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We're sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we've often found this the best course to take. And You know, this is specifically talking about a marriage. However, you know, in general, I think the idea here is I've done things in my life and I've treated people in certain ways at certain times that I feel really, really bad about it. And I feel very guilty about it. And it sort of eats me up at times. And what I really like to do, especially when I first came into AA, what I thought would give me relief in making these amends is just to go and dump it all over the person. You know, so here's a list of all the things I did wrong. And a lot of times, the person doesn't actually know what it was I did to them. And what I've discovered, this is why it's so important to have a sponsor when I'm doing this. I'll just be straight with you. Most of the ideas I was having in the first few months of sobriety when I was doing the steps were the complete opposite of what the right thing to do was. I had this sponsor, he used to joke me. We'd be at an intersection and he'd say, "Graham, I'm not sure what way to go. Should we go right or left?" And I'd say, "Go right." And he'd say, "Okay, I know we should go left then." And I'm like, "This guy's a smartass. What's he saying that for?" And that was the guy that introduced me to the words, "I don't know," you know, and backed me into a corner where I actually didn't know something. And that became part of my vocabulary. "I don't know." So anyway, to get back to this, the point is that this idea that I can just go out and say stuff to people, give my parents, for example, a big list of what I did, or give my girlfriend or wife, whatever it was at the time, you know, a big list of my indiscretions and dishonesty, and just lay it all out there. That's, I think, really trying to save my skin at someone else's expense. And that's why it's so important to have a sponsor. I don't think this is about lying to people, and it's certainly not about me on my own deciding and justifying not making amends to people. But there's certainly a way to say things, and there's certainly a level of detail that may or may not be appropriate given. But it does say it depends what the circumstances are. So I think the great thing about this step is I'm not doing it alone. And again, what it's trying to do is hit the reset button in that relationship. Because what happens to me is that I really isolate myself within the relationship. I isolate myself in my mind. So I'm living in the house with the person, but I'm all up in my head. And a lot of times what's going through my head is rather negative assessment of how that person's doing. That's what's going through my mind. I'm taking their inventory. And it's such a mental habit for me, I don't always realise that I'm actually doing it. And that's why it's so important on a daily basis that I'm being honest with other men about what I'm feeling and what's going through the circus in my head. Because I can really talk myself, and I'll just level with you, over this last weekend, I spent an extended period of time with my wife and children. And by last night, what was going through my head was, you know, I don't even know how I ended up here. I don't know how I ended up with her and them here. What the hell am I doing here? Someone like me. I'm too big for this show. I need to get out of here. And then I'm on rent.com looking at apartments. It's just crazy. And then I talked to some guys in AA, and then I'm like, "That was just nutty." let me tell you this, I've been sober long enough that I've learned not to speak any of this out loud to my wife. Because it's nonsense. But that's absolutely what happens to me if I'm not staying current on a daily basis. So, you know, I think it's very important that I grow some sort of filter. And what that means is I'm being more gentle with people. But sometimes my wife will say to me, "Are you angry with me?" And I'll be like, "What are you talking about?" So I'm acting as if I'm angry. I'm not saying anything. I'm not yelling. I'm not pushing the furniture over. But my demeanor is I'm angry. You know, and so it's useful in some ways to have somebody tell me that, because then I can be like, "No, I'm not angry." And then I can try to hit the reset button on that. But sometimes that doesn't happen as quick as it should.
You put me in a frame of mind. I was just thinking about, you know, restraint of pen and tongue, right? Something that's not on my resume. We were talking before the meeting. I got no filter, and we kind of feel like it's an admirable thing, you know. I just throw it out there, you know. But I remember I was shaving. I was just shaving. I was kind of, you know, thinking about myself, because that's what you do. And I was shaving, and my wife was going on about something, you know. And without even thinking about it, I said, "You may be suffering from a problem that only a spiritual experience would solve. And then I looked down and she was standing in the doorway. Don't you ever give me that shit. I was like, I wasn't even present for that, you know? So I love the way that opens, whatever the situation. And that's kind of the way you guys have always gently treated me. You listen to me, you're very patient, blah, 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 as I go on about my perceived injustices and the list of what she said and what he did and how they don't appreciate me. And because I can set it up. I'm good at setting it up, so you'll join me, you know? Let's go kick his ass. You know, I can persuade you. But whatever the situation, David, there's usually something we have to do about it. And I was thinking about when we were reading the this paragraph that when I did the sexual misconduct inventory, it asked me to look in each relationship and where had I been selfish, where had I been dishonest, where had I been self-seeking, where had I been frightened, where had I been inconsiderate, where was I to blame? So you go through all that, and then there's another very interesting question there. What should I have done instead? And I'm always like, been honest, been considerate, been others, been not been selfish, whatever the negative of that is. And I found a very interesting thing, that if I practice consideration, a lot of the rest of that stuff goes away. If I'm really spending some time considering you, what your life is like, what you're worried about, what your dreams are, what your hopes are, what you're struggling with, if I really consider, I have a tendency to be honest. I have a tendency to be helpful. You know, I have a tendency not to be trying to get what I want, and more of a tendency to help you. Just a simple act of consideration. And I think that's really all that this paragraph is just screaming at me. It's like, I cannot unburden myself at your expense. You know, there's my mother doesn't need to know that I was an intravenous drug user. You know, I don't have to just trot that out so that I feel better. You know, and so forth. You know, in a general way, I've been wild. So I have to always practice consideration as we're going through this process. And the reason I'm laboring that point is that I have found that when I do practice simple consideration, it changes. Everything changes.
Okay, we're going to go over to page 82. And now we're going to read from the paragraph, if we have no such complication, and we're going to go down to the bottom of page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" So, I'm under absolutely no illusions. I've been sober a long time, and I'm absolutely under no illusions that left to my own devices, I will completely destroy all the relationships in my life again. I'll burn them all to the ground again. And that is why I need Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's why I need to be working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. Otherwise, I am doomed. Because on my own, I'm so selfish and I'm so unaware of myself and I'm so unaware of how my actions and words are affecting those around me, I actually don't care. And I destroy it again. I drive my wife away, the kids, it all goes the job. So that's really why I have to keep coming here, is because on my own I can't do this, but we can do it together. So it says there's plenty we should do at home, and we talked a bit about this last week, but how I wanted when I first got sober to run around shouting, "I'm an alcoholic, I'm an AA," because what I wanted was other people to understand me. It's what I've wanted my whole life. I want you to understand me, because I'm a big victim and I've had a really hard time. And that's my favourite song. It's so sweet, I love it. It's the Ballad of Graham. And really what that is utter selfishness, because these are people, my parents, for example, told me after I got sober that the worst 10 years of their marriage was the 10 years that I was drinking and living in their house. Because I wasn't just drinking, I was stealing, I was lying, I was cheating, I was destroying, and I was hurting people. That's what I did. So, you know, for me to come in now with a big fanfare that I'm sober and you should all be happy is absolutely absurd, but that's exactly what I want to do. And that's, again, why I needed a sponsor. And like I said last week, my sponsor's words were simple. How about you just shut up? How about you shut up with the family about being an alcoholic? Just stop it. Why, instead of being an alcoholic to your parents, what you've been doing that just fine. Why don't you try and be this thing called a son? Why don't you try? And if you don't know what a son is like, look at your brother-in-law. He's a nice guy. Just do what he does. You know, call your mother every week. Send her a card on her birthday. Send her a Christmas present. Send her some flowers on Mother's Day. Go to visit her. It's not rocket science, but no. I want to hold on to what you did to me. And you know, really, that's what it's that's not going to cut it. And when I think back on the things that I did to my mother and father, and the things I did to women that have been lucky enough to be in a relationship with me over the years, when I think back on that, it's pretty shocking, my behaviour. But I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on this idea that I'm really a nice guy, and that you should all like me because I've got great intentions. Let's not talk about the crappy little things I've done, or the crappy big things I've done. Let's not focus on that. Let's focus on, hello, how nice to see you, I'm a nice guy. So it's saying, you know, when we really get down to it, the only reason that I did, we were working with this homeless guy a few weeks ago. What I mean is we were trying to help him, me and some other guys in AA, and he's homeless. And the only reason that didn't happen to me is because my mum and dad are middle class and they had some money and they got me out of situations that I got myself into. That's the bottom line. It's not because I'm a good guy. They saved my ass over and over and over again. And this is the bizarre thing about alcoholism. I end up hating the people that love me the most, and I hate them the most. My parents did absolutely nothing wrong with me. I was never abused. I was never treated badly. I wanted for nothing as a child, and I despised them both. I absolutely hated them, and I was convinced they had screwed me up, and the counsellor told me so. Yeah, the therapist said, yeah, you're right, your mum and dad suck. And I'm like, yeah, let's get them. You know, the therapist tells me to express my anger to my parents about how they treated me when I was a kid. And that's like the green light for loony over here. So, this is opposite to that, right? This is opposite to that. I've got a sister that left home because I was so crazy. She left home at 16 to get away from me. Yeah? I've got lots of people that I've hurt. And I've been very selfish and inconsiderate. When you live with me, it's a bad scene, you know? And I want to run around saying, well, look at me, I'm not drinking. So this is definitely an ongoing thing. And I think what this really focuses in on is my lack of ability to see things as they really are. And that's the same now as it was then to some extent. I can't see things the way they really are. And I especially lack empathy with other people. What empathy is if I get a big stick and hit you on the head with it, I'm supposed to think, oh, that probably really hurt that person. And I'm not saying that I don't think that, but I really have issues, I have a problem experiencing how my actions affect other people. It's almost like I don't really care. But I'm not going to say that, because then I would look bad. So this is really what we're getting at here. And the great thing about having a sponsor and trying to apply the principles of AA through these living amends, because I'm sitting down with the family and making amends to them, but then what? And that's the importance of having these men in my life, when I can take what I'm thinking to them instead of telling it to the family, and they're like, how about you get some flowers for your mother? How about you say, you know, how about you tell your wife you love her? Or how about this? Or how about that? And trying to help me, how about you do the dishes tonight? Help me apply these principles in the relationships in my life so that they might get better. Instead of focusing on me and how I feel all the time, getting into action at home, it's not easy to consistently do that.
Yeah, I love the tornado analogy, you know, that I'm like a tornado just roaring through life, trying, gimme, 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 grab, 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 more, more, more for Davy Boy, you know. I want more stuff. And that line, we feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. I cannot tell you how badly I wanted sobriety to be enough. I really intuitively felt like if I could just stop doing this, then everything else would fall in place. Everything else would be just fine if I could just stop drinking. So, yeah, I'm the tornado. Years of selfish and inconsiderate habits roaring through the lives of other people. And as I look at it honestly as I'm capable, all my life people gave me a break. You know, my parents gave me a break. The school administrators gave me a break. The police officers gave me a break. My friends, my girlfriends, everybody gave me a break. All the whole way. I never got a raw deal. At least that I didn't deserve, you know. But the trouble is I expect it. I absolutely, the minimum daily requirement is you give me a break. Now, I'm not letting you off the hook because you got responsibilities to me. You've made promises to me, and I will see that they come true. But I need a break. So, yeah, I'm just like Graham. I hate the people who love me the most. I resent them. I spent years on a bar stool. Talking about how bad my father was to me and what he did to the family and the apologies that he owes me, and you know. Meanwhile, I am not practicing anything like kindness or consideration or decency for that man. You know, I just treated him like somebody who owed me everything, all the time. So I didn't even extend to him basic courtesy many times. So sobriety's enough, right? You know, just stop drinking. And I do that, and I really, it's then that I really believe that I experience alcoholism. You know, that's when alcoholism is painful. That's when I have to live frightened and resentful and angry and live with all the, and remember all the things that I was capable of saying and doing without any anesthesia. Now I really need help. That's all I got.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 83, right up at the top. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyse the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticise them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behaviour will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a sceptic out of anyone. And that's exactly what we've been talking about. It talks about a long period. And I'm a guy that just wants to go in and say I'm sorry and then we're good. You know? I'm sorry that I screwed you over for the last 10 years. We good? Great. Business as usual. Like David said, I want to be instantly forgiven. And what I found when I made amends to some people, my sponsor was really big on not using the word sorry. I was not allowed to use the word sorry. Instead, I was to use the word I was wrong. I regret treating you badly. I have treated you very badly. And then give some examples. What do I need to do to make things right between you and I? And so forth. Those are the sort of phrases that I was to commit to memory to take into these situations. I did sit down with my family and tell them the past as we now see it. Isn't that interesting? Because in the fourth step, I see the second column, what you did to me. And now what I should be seeing, hopefully, is the fourth column, what I did to you. And that's what I'm to talk about. I'm not to talk about what you did to me. I'm not to mention it. Even if it's huge, and even if I really secretly deep down think that you're an idiot, I'm not going to say that to you. I'm going to shut up about that stuff and just tell you where I was wrong and that I regret treating you that way. So I've found that, you know, again, it's talking about the daily program. It says every morning I'm supposed to be asking God in a meditation how I can be patient, tolerant, kind and loving to my family. I'm to do that every day and try to carry those things into those relationships. And that's an interesting thing to sit and think about in the morning when I'm saying my prayers. How can I be patient with my children today, you know? Because I can be impatient with them. How can I be tolerant of my wife today and so on and so forth? And then it talks about this is not a theory, you know? And I love theories. I'm a guy that loves intellectual stuff. I like making plans. I like writing stuff down. You know, this is my plan. But what this is saying is that I actually have to do this. I actually have to do it on a daily basis. And I'm really not too happy about that. I just want the one time I'm sorry and then we're good. What this is saying is this is a long period, i.e. the rest of my life. And I need to practice this each day. And some days are going to go better than others. And then it talks again about what we'd already touched on, running around telling everybody, I've found God, you need to find God too. Are you kidding me? And I love this bit. This is one of my favourite sentences in the big book. Our behaviour will convince them more than our words. And I'll just translate that for you. Shut up. Shut your big mouth. You've heard it all before. Show us what you're going to do now. We're not interested in your big promises about how you're going to change. We're not interested in your big promises about what you're going to do in AA. Just shut your big mouth and show us with your feet what you're going to do. You know, how do you know the alcoholic's lying? He's talking. Yeah, that's me. So come on, show me. Show me what you're going to do. And that idea that the family are very skeptical. And I always say this to guys I work with. Your wife's just waiting for you to get drunk. That's what she's expecting to happen at any moment. So just stop saying all this crazy stuff to her about how you've changed. And just show her day in and day out how you've changed. I think it took my mother maybe 5 years to somewhat trust me again. After I came into AA. And to realise that, you know, I wasn't going to steal everything in her house. And she didn't need to take her purse to the bathroom with her when I was in the house. Yeah, so when she goes to the bathroom and the purse is there, I have a big smile on my face because I realise that she trusts me now.
Yeah, I haven't had a drink in 23 years and I've got a sister who's got her eye on me still. It's like, I'm watching you. I don't know about anybody else. I love the being careful not to criticize. Their defects may be glaring. I don't know about anybody else, but I've been burdened with the gift of insight. I have a crystal clear, laser sharp focus on what you're doing wrong. I can't see it in me, but I'm happy to point it out to you. You know, so as we've discussed, that wears people out. In this little parable with my wife, I came back to AA. People told me what was wrong with me. It reminded me what was wrong with me. I just made a commitment to doing the simple actions of AA one day at a time. Continued not to drink, have an experience, year and a half separation, we come back together again. We're all living under the same roof today. There was a lot of frank analysis of the past going on in that whole process. And God, her defects are glaring. And you try not to criticize them. Try it, you know? Bite your tongue. It's hard. It's very difficult. But it's not a theory. You know, we have to live it. And I can tell you that just like I never, ever, ever, ever woke up in the morning and thought, man, I really missed an opportunity to get fallen down drunk last night. I really wish I had done that. You know, I've never woken up in the morning and thought, man, I really wish I'd have said all that hateful stuff that was on my mind last night. You know, so, I mean, I got to come at this from the other way. You know, it's certainly not from any kind of spiritual evolution that I keep my mouth shut. I have experienced the pain of not keeping my mouth shut so many times. And I imagine I'm going to step in that again because I'm not going to sit before anybody and claim that I have perfect relief from that. Sometimes it's just, oh, it's irresistible. And I do it with my friends, I do it with my parents, I do it with everybody. It's not just my wife, but it's like there's another process in here going, just don't say that, David. Really, just shut up, you know? And I'm like, I know, but... And then it's out. It's just on the table. So, a remorseful mumbling, I'm sorry, won't fit the bill at all. The other thing that I will find, and this is just so we can put a carrot out here, is I have found that the more readily I am to confess my own faults, my own defects, my own fear, the more willing I am to show up in front of my wife and talk about how selfish I was, how I failed to consider her, and how I went through the day, you know, thinking about myself, and I didn't spend much time thinking of you, and I apologize, and I, you know, the more willing I am to do that, every once in a while, I mean every once in a while, like maybe once every 5 years, she'll say something like, that was my fault, I'm sorry. You know, and it's like the angels sing, da-da! I got another 10 years in me, babe. You know? So, yeah.
Okay, let's go down to the bottom of page. Sorry, it's not the bottom. Page 83, there may be some wrongs. We're just going to read that one paragraph. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen, we send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And, you know, what I want to talk about is not doing amends and my experience with that. So when I first came to AA, my backside was really on fire. And I was really, really motivated to do the steps. And my first sponsor got me up to the ninth step within a couple of months. And I started making amends to people, paying people back, all of that stuff. And I think I can sit here and honestly say to you, I pretty much made all of those amends. Maybe there's one or two that weren't made, but pretty much I made the amends to my family, financial restitution to people that I'd ripped off for money, sent it back, paid it off. And that was that. But then what happened to me was I entered a period in AA where I've never stopped coming to AA and I've never drank or drugged since I came back to AA. But I'm coming to AA and going to meetings and then this double life starts up outside AA. And what I mean by that is I'm doing stuff that I know I shouldn't be doing. You know, whether it's with money or my relationships with women or whatever it is, this other life's going on out there. I'm being dishonest at work. And so forth. And that's definitely been a feature of sobriety. And that is linked to me not making amends to people. Because what happens is if I'm not staying current on this, I'm a guy, this stuff doesn't go away. This resentfulness doesn't go away. I make new resentments towards people. The fear doesn't go away. I'm still afraid of different things. And the sex conduct, if I'm not careful, it's going to be there too. So the selfish sex conduct. So what has happened to me at certain times is I've said, I'm not making amends to that guy. And I'm not really running this past people in AA. I'm just deciding, hey, I'm not making amends to that guy, whatever. And what has happened is that stuff builds up over time. Again, like it did before. And I get myself in hot water. And I start to feel very, very, very uncomfortable in sobriety. And I've been through that a couple of times. And it seems like the longer I'm sober, sometimes the more difficult it is to humble myself before people and make an honest admission where I was wrong. To go to people and say, you know, I was wrong and just make a simple amend to them. Because somehow I think I'm a big deal now and I shouldn't have to do that anymore. And I can justify it. I've been sober a long time. I'm not saying sorry to him. I'm not apologizing to him. I'm not telling him I was wrong. So that's something that it's important for me to be aware of and to make sure that I'm not delaying. If I delay, it's dangerous. And the reason it's dangerous is I get blocked off again. I get blocked off from peace of mind. And the old behavior starts to come back. And if I'm doing it, it's not old behavior. It's just behavior.
Whenever I come to this paragraph in the honest letter, I think about my father, and that was a man that I when I started landing in guidance counselors' offices and psychiatrists' offices and family counselors and all that, they wanted to talk about two things. They wanted to talk about my relationship with my dad, and steal second. They wanted to talk about my relationship with my father and my drinking. I was like, my old man's a jerk, and I drink whatever I want. What else you got? And so I spent many, many years as parallel track of really wanting to have a relationship with this man, to be loved by this man, to participate with as a son with this man, and on the parallel track, demanding an apology, resentful, despising him, hating him. I could never reconcile that any other way than to just drink and ignore it, postpone and evade. Those are my two coping strategies. Can it be avoided? Can it be ignored? And so the time came to make amends to my dad. And I talked it over with my sponsor, and I could not face that man. I knew that I could not sit across from him and do this, because our relationship at that time, every time we sat down together, it just becomes antagonistic, and I was going to say one of us usually leaves in tears. I usually leave in tears or screaming, I hate you, or something like that. So basically, I talked it over with my sponsor, and we went through these simple instructions, and we're going to write an honest letter. You're going to talk to that man about, you know, that you embarrassed him in front of his friends. You stole from him. He was a veterinarian. Veterinarians keep a lot of narcotics and tranquilizers and things you can mix together to make other things. Woo-hoo. So I did all that. So I wrote the man a letter, and then he actually reviewed, my sponsor reviewed it, and said, now let's rewrite it and leave his fault out of it. Because I was still setting him up for an apology. I was still setting him up. I was still explaining all of my bad behavior, and I'm still... all I wanted to do was extract an apology from him all my life. So I rewrite the letter, and it basically talks about how I lied, I cheated, I stole. It's always bothered me. I want to make it right. I stand ready to make it right. He wrote, and I asked him one thing. I said, I don't want anything from you. I'm not asking for forgiveness. Just please acknowledge that you read this letter. That was all I asked, because in our family, we are like masters of pretending that never happened. I just didn't want it to just go away and never know whether or not it was seen. You know, that was my thing. So I just asked him politely, would you acknowledge that you read it? So he wrote me back a letter saying, David, you always give me the hardest tasks. And what he said in it, he did not admit that he was wrong. He didn't offer any of his crimes. He didn't offer any forgiveness. But what he said was, I don't know how much longer I'm going to live. Why don't you and I go for the good from here on out? And that became a contract between he and I. And even whiskey couldn't cut through that, you know. Years after that had happened, we commenced to just being friends. And I stopped expecting him to be a father. I started seeing him like another man. But he would be halfway through a half gallon early times, and he'd start in kind of on the old behavior, kind of hammering on me a little bit. He's feeling pretty good. And I'd just say, oh, Pop, I thought we agreed to put all that behind us. He'd say, right you are, lad. Right you are. And then we'd move on. Even whiskey couldn't cut through that. And it changed our lives. And when that man died, he was one of my best friends. He's been gone since 2004. I miss him every single day. I hear his voice. I feel like he's with me. I love him very much. And we were friends when he died. An honest letter, a simple, honest letter. Who, you know, like, I can't make that up.
Okay, let's finish up then. We're just going to read what they call the promises. We'll start off at the bottom of page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. With these extravagant promises, we think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And, you know, these are always read at the meeting. People read them at the meeting because the alcoholics like it because they're getting something, you know. But the bottom line is, these are, it says they'll manifest when I'm halfway through the amends, the ninth step amends. Not the steps, but the ninth step amends. And these, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, and brag about the promises in my life, but definitely things have changed as a result of doing these steps. And I think the whole theme of this is to stop arguing with people and just to try to make peace with those around me by admitting that I'm wrong. And then moving forward, it's if I continue to do this, the promise is that I can live reasonably comfortably most of the time in my own skin without having to drink and do drugs, and I can have useful and whole relationships with people around me. And my life can be built upon the foundations of the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Getting a sponsor, taking the steps, going to meetings, participating in a home group, and saying some simple prayers. And on that basis, everybody in this room, everybody that does these things consistently, can build a wonderful life.
We're going to let that be the last word. We're out of time. We're going to pass the seven tradition basket. It states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I'm going to start it because I need change. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the General Service Office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites us all. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? There's literature available out by the coffee. And, yeah. Do you want to do some announcements? Are there any AA-related announcements?
I'll do this one first. There's a bunch of flyers for this. We're putting this on. It's called Supper and a Speaker. And we're getting this guy called Rich B. He's coming all the way down from Ocean City, Maryland, to talk to us. He does a great talk, especially on Step 9. David and I went to see this guy at a conference. He's only 6 years sober. We judged him before he talked, saying, this guy's going to suck, and he blew our socks off. We were both sitting there like, wow, what just happened? So he's going to bring it on that night. It starts at 7. It's on Monday, January the 14th. It's in the church over there, and the food at 6, meeting at 7. Please feel free to take a flyer and tell other people about it. Thank you.
Potluck supper. It's going to be a good time, and it's going to be in that church.
Thanks.
It's close. Wyatt, would you take us out?
Trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation,